Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schrankelberg, and Andre Kleiner's online. Hey, Andre.
Hey, Fred.
Hey. Well, happy Monday. Yeah, it's Monday today, and I think you mentioned that you're getting ready to travel, and next week I'll be heading down to Orlando for Rams. This episode's going to come out well after the fact, so for those that did attend Rams, hopefully we had a chance to meet and had a good time. I'm sure we will. This is kind of that time warp thing where we're recording one day and the podcast is coming out probably, I think, more than a month later from when we're doing it. But anyway, it's Monday and it's another week. And I know that in reliability world of reliability engineers, it's a week of meetings, of different analysis, of different tasks, of different work and all that kind of stuff. And the thought struck me, Andre, is that one of the things that I used to do, and I haven't had the chance to do it very often lately, is when working with a mechanical team, say an industrial engineering team or a mechanical team, and I'm thinking in particular when I was working with the inkjet printers, the mechanical folks had some wonderful tools. They had SolidWorks, I believe, but they also had a finite element modeling built right into the tool, so they could set up and run simple meshes and simple analysis of their systems and helping them solve different design issues and problems and loading and stress concentrations and a variety of things. In your work, Andre, I know that we've talked about electronics more often, but do you get involved with much with the mechanical side?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And funny you ask that as part of my job, actually do a lot of training in a lot of our finite element analysis, for example, now is done in Poland and in India. And just recently I had a seminar with our team in Poland, and actually our folks from India chimed in. They connected via Skype. But actually what was interesting, there was a lot of interest on FEA, finite element analysis community, in learning more about reliability, because by their own admission, they said they really know nothing about reliability. Hmm. So that was kind of interesting turn, and I had a chance to spend quite some time with both teams discussing that.
All right. Well, so real briefly, finite element analysis is a way of looking at how materials respond to and say or move, and it basically says I'm going to have a force or an impulse or some phenomena is going to occur, and then it basically looks at it one millisecond after another or whatever the time is and says, all right, this is going to deflect a little bit right here, and what's the effect on the surrounding material, and then as each piece moves, then you use some mathematics behind it and you say, how is that going to affect the piece of material next to it or the next component or whatever? So it's a simple system that has the power of a computer to do a gazillion calculations fairly quickly. I remember years and years ago, a finite element analysis would run overnight. We just didn't have the computing power. But today,
overnight. I've seen jobs running for weeks.
Oh, actually, wow.
back in the 80s and 90s. In fact, one of my first jobs was doing finite element analysis. I mean, I do have a background in that. So, yeah, those really long jobs.
Well, I should have asked you to describe it then, because you've got hands-on experience. Now, I mean, the tools we got today, though, are essentially built in to the CAD programs. Do you see it being used for reliability work as often as it should be, or is there a barrier for people to use it that way?
Well, I mean, first of all, I think we need to define what means use it for reliability, because, mm-hmm. I mean, when they analyze a lot of structures and like a simple example, vibration. Mm-hmm. For example, they can calculate resonant frequencies, calculate deflections, and say, okay, we're going to experience this kind of stress or strain on the part or whatever system you're testing. Mm-hmm. And if that exceeds maximum allowable, then it's going to fail. So some people qualify that as reliability analysis, but actually it's not, because I think the major problem with FEA versus reliability is more like deterministic versus probabilistic approach. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think if we look at reliability from this point of view, then that is not happening. At least it might, not much, let's put it this way.
Well, the analysis is on, I mean, you put in bulk material properties, or the design elements assume the connections are tight and the material is relatively uniform in how it performs. And that would be deterministic, if I interpret it correctly. Where probabilistic is, we're looking at no two flanges are made exactly the same. So there's going to be variation in how much load it can hold.
Yeah, not only that, it's even like if you look at material properties, usually they come from certain source and they're like, okay, what's my Young modulus? It's this number. Or like, what's right. the density? It's this number. But in reality, it's not this number. There's this tolerance and there's a distribution. And, mm-hmm, and when mm-hmm. you do a fairly complex finite element analysis, then you have a stack up of those of tolerances or distributions or probabilities, mm-hmm. which give you at the end not one answer but actually a distribution,
right?
Or like multiple answers. Mm-hmm. And I know there's tools out there of like finite element analysis tools which can do that, but frankly I have not seen it done. I mean, as applied to reliability.
That's right. I'm with you on that. I think because it's built into the tools, and the finite element analysis is fairly straightforward when it's built into, say, SolidWorks. It's not the complex. It's not able to handle the probabilistic elements that go into it. It is a useful tool. There's no. I don't think that's
no question about it.
Right. Like your example, if I see a vibration that is going to have excite a harmonic and we get too much motion, and we know that that's going to cause damage to, say, a circuit board or to the structure. I would say that's the designer doing what they're supposed to do to make a robust and good design. But how would you extend that, though, that they're looking at the reliability aspects of it, given the tools that they have, not necessarily the fancy ones that can deal with the probabilities?
One of the recommendations I made to my team, the team I was working on, mm-hmm. with, just run scenarios, because I've seen a couple of cases when an engineer was doing modeling of a radio. And this mm-hmm. was a kind of fairly simple vibration case. It was a box, so it wasn't really involving a whole lot of electronics. So it was purely mechanical. And what was interesting is they couldn't even replicate the resonant frequencies after we tested and were able to measure them, mm-hmm. which was really surprising. Because usually resonant frequencies is the easiest thing and most accurate thing to get. It's the other thing, like deflections, and then you need to account for some energy dissipation. But frequency is usually easy. And the problem was that like they were modeling certain things, like the screw they considered as a rigid connection, but actually it wasn't.
Right.
So one of my recommendations was, when you are not absolutely sure, and usually you're not, just run a couple of scenarios where, like, you model that same screw as maybe different type of connection, mm-hmm. or like add some spring properties to that, and kind of play with those spring properties and get the scenarios and basically say, okay, my results can be somewhere between this and this. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And with today's tools, I mean, you can do that. You don't have to run like one task for a week.
That's right. And I've seen it done where a designer was trying to look at, it was a sleep assistance medical device. It was a sleep apnea treatment kind of a device. CPAP, I think is what they're called. And he was looking at the airflow, and he had a tool that allowed him to model the airflow and how much sound it would create. So he was trying to avoid whistling and other annoying sounds and try to keep it as quiet as he could. But he had all these different features within the airflow that he could play with, that he could modify and change as he was creating the design. So he was able to use that, and it was essentially a finite element analysis of this fluid dynamics type of a system. But he very quickly then used the design of experiments to set up a set of different the variables that he was most interested in, and just ran the different scenarios, fed it back into the results he got, fed it back into the design of experiments example or array, and optimized his design very, very quickly. It took him an afternoon to do it. So instead of building prototypes, which is what he was going to do, he was going to build, I think, a dozen different prototypes with different structural features in it and then go measure the sound. He was able to really shorten that by using this tool in a very deliberate way, and allowed him to minimize the sound, which was a primary reason for customer complaints and failures in the field. It was that they got too loud.
Yeah. Well, other problems like I had to deal with is calculating temperatures inside the electronic box. And again, people, our FAA guys, they were coming into this analysis with certain assumptions, like, okay, here's how much heat will be dissipated, and here's the material properties, and here's this component. But in reality, again, you don't really know all those values, and you do need to run something, maybe scenarios, maybe it kind of model things, properties or certain even geometry as statistical distributions, if you have the opportunity. But one of the eye opener for our team was when I was showing them this stress strength kind of concept where, okay, things fail, where you get that probability of failure where those two distributions overlap.
That's right.
Where basically, it's pretty well-known concept to reliability engineers. But it turned out it wasn't really that well-known to FAA folks. And when I explained it to them, like, okay, where stress basically exceeds strength, then that's where the problem occurs. I think that really helped them a lot to understand, to kind of cross that bridge between FAA and reliability.
Well, that's a good, I didn't even think of that, is that you're right. A lot of the finite element stuff and the way I've seen designers do it is they look for where the stress concentration is, for example, or where the temperature rise is at a maximum. And then they need to compare that to something. And that's where, in some cases, it's pretty obvious. If I get too hot, I'm going to melt things. So they look at temperatures that way. But it's by using the stress strength concept, and many mechanical engineers I've talked to are familiar with that, but get it into the modeling hands so that it's included in the model itself as you analyze your results, as compare that to the environment that you're going to be putting it in.
Yeah, and like I said, kind of looking back at my experience as a finite element analysis engineer, I remember like everything was pretty much deterministic. Yeah, like, okay, here's this number, here's this property, here's this geometry, and here's your result. And again, kind of looking back from what I know now, it's like, yeah, this was not the best way to analyze things and draw conclusions.
Because so you know better now. And so hopefully our listeners
like,
are
like
getting
to
it too.
So. Yeah, I'd like to think so.
Well, I also have run into the situation where We took a design. It was a circuit board that was inside a handheld device, and it was the initial design had it was inserted basically into a cylinder, and it was only fixed on one end, and so the other end of this long thin circuit board could move, not a lot, but it could flex, and that's usually not a good thing for a circuit board. So I raised a flag for that and said, you know, we should really think about attaching this another way. And there was cost issues and constraints and space issues and all these other things. And they didn't want to do it. So we decided to do a finite element analysis to see what kind of motion it would have if the device was dropped, for example, a shock impulse coming through the system, what would happen to the circuit board. And it came back with an S-shaped motion instead of a diving board type motion. And the designer, the mechanical engineer goes, that is not possible. I did the, you know, analysis and everything else. This should not see that kind of complex motion, which was going to create a much bigger deflections across the board and much sharper deflections than what he was saying it was going to do. And so okay, we've got one analysis that says it will do it, and another analysis says it should be okay. We need to test this. And I think that's the other part of finite element analysis. It can inform where you go make measurements and what you go test. And so we took a clear outer body instead of the opaque plastic that we used. We made up a opaque version or a clear version of it and a high-speed camera. And after lots of tries, we actually got to see the motion of that circuit board. And we're able to repeat it. And so we got a number of videos of this circuit board doing this very complex motion. And so there was no doubt that the finite element analysis we had done was more accurate than the initial design. And so we ended up, and during that testing, we also broke components off the circuit board. So we didn't really even need the high-speed camera. That it was just icing on the cake to prove what kind of motion was occurring. But that was the analysis in and of itself gets pushback a lot of times, unless you have some experimental data to support it in a lot of cases.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's extremely important to be able to tune your model. And like in that case, I was mentioning before with radio and where they wouldn't even get the a vibration mode. The good thing was that we could actually put the radio kind of existed already. Mm-hmm. It was other things we couldn't figure out. But so we put it on the shaker and turned out like all those frequencies and the modes were totally different. Mm-hmm. So we were able to kind of go back and do some adjustments to the model. And again, sometimes that part is not there. You cannot verify your model in like without that your model may be very much off.
That's right. It's an iterative process. That's what I've learned about using finite element analysis. It's not a one shot and oh we're good. It goes back to that garbage in, garbage out kind of concept. Do we make the right assumptions? Do we consider the right factors? All of those elements still come true to it.
Yeah, I think other challenge with FEA is. Like non-linearity of some of the some of the phenomena. Like mm-hmm. if we're looking at, let's say, fatigue, I mean, in my line of work, I work a lot with solder joint fatigue, mm-hmm. where like, yeah, we go electronic parts go through thermal cycling, and after a while, the solder joints develop cracks and fail. Mm-hmm. And that's been a big challenge. I mean, there are some models out there, but just to come up with the right model, how such a complex material as solder basically fatigues and there's a creep involved. Mm-hmm. It's just like those models, I haven't really seen good models to get a reasonably accurate time to failure, and especially now when we experimenting with lead-free solder, where like there's like 10 to 15 different alloys mm-hmm. out there.
That's right.
And you don't really know which one.
And they all respond slightly differently. But we're also getting pushed by time, where we really do need those models, because we don't get the year to go do a thermal cycling testing. We might get it started, but we generally have to make decisions long before the tests have conclusive results. It's a challenge.
Thermal cycling tests are very long, especially like in the automotive industry where I work. Mm-hmm. You need to simulate 15 years life. And even with all those acceleration models and accelerated testing, the thermal cycling test takes a few months.
That's right.
3-4 months. And with some of the heavier parts, it may run like 6 months.
That's right. But it's not a finite element analysis can inform modeling, you know, your thermal testing. And if you get a good set of experimental data to support your models, it can help you on future things. But it does take that discipline to get it right all the way through. If you have set up a model and just because the machine kicked out a number doesn't necessarily mean it's right. I think it's like any of the tools that we deal with, Andre, it's a bit of understanding of how it works and what its limitations are. It's not just a green light machine and we don't have to think about it.
Yeah, I think what I would kind of summarize this with is I think if the more opportunities for reliability engineers to work with fine element analysis folks would really be beneficial for both sides, where like FEA guys will understand reliability a little bit better, and I think reliability guys will understand the capability of FEA in maybe kind of something they could extract from that or learn from that in their work when mm-hmm. they need to do predictions, like when the hardware is not available. Mm-hmm. And I mean, maybe your experience is different, but in my experience, it's really, I haven't seen a lot of interaction between FEA and reliability folks.
Yep. And I agree with you. Good summary, Andre. And so, since we're recording this on Monday, let's leave our listeners with a little bit of homework. So if you're, you know, well, one, thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. But now here's your chance to take this idea and go find the people in your organization that have the capability to do finite element analysis. It's built into a number of good tools that many of our mechanical engineers are using. There is different models for fluid dynamics and systems. There's for thermal engineering. And there's models and systems for that, computational fluid dynamics. Those tools are all valuable. But I agree with you, Andre, is that it takes a partnership. You need somebody that understands the tool and its capability and what kind of modeling can and can't be done and how to interpret the results. But adding just a flavor of reliability engineering to that can go a long way to support your program and work with your design team to improve the results you get.
Yeah, and improve the prediction because, yeah, let's face it, reliability engineers often ask about predictions. Yeah, I mean,
right.
What kind of reliability you expect? And yeah, unless you have a crystal ball,
that's right.
That sometimes become a bit challenging.
Sometimes, all the time. So that's a bit of homework for our listeners. And also, let us know what you think of the show. What kind of topics you are enjoying or not, and what we could improve on. If you have any ideas that you'd like to suggest for us, we're all ears for that. We'd love to hear from you. And we'll talk about, essentially ask you to join us at the table. Get a cup of coffee and we'll talk shop. And so you can certainly participate by heading over to reliability.fm. And you'll see the podcasts that are available on the network. Plus, you'll find comments and suggestion box type forms that you can provide your inputs. Or just get a hold of us directly. We're under the About section of the site, you'll find multiple ways to get in touch with us. So, Andrea, I think that's a wrap. Let's go do some finite element modeling this week.
Yeah, let's do that. And thank you, Fred, for doing this.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.